Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, 90-Day New Job Plan, Bosses, Chapter 1. Here we go. Well, see, it was a while ago, dude, that we released our 90-Day New Job Plan cast. And I think you promised that we were going to give more detail about the tasks that somebody might go through in order to be more effective in the first 3 months of their new job. And here we go. Here's a start on that. We have more to cover, but here's a start.
Yeah, we did. I think, you know, Manager Tools and Career Tools are famous for saying we don't manage our bosses. On the other hand, we absolutely believe you have to have a good relationship with your boss. Your relationship with your boss is the most important relationship you have in the firm. Now, if you have 10 directs as a manager, well, then all of those relationships together outrank your relationship with your boss, but not any one of them. Your boss has enormous impact on you. And many people, I think rightly, most people, when they come into a job, look, we want them to be thinking about their directs if they're a manager, but most people would probably say, hey, I gotta get to know my boss. And I would also say a lot of bosses don't make it easy. Oh, you work for me and I get to do what I want. And I don't think bosses necessarily intend to be callous. But I know lots of bosses who say, I don't want somebody who needs to be managed, which translates into, I'm not going to manage you, I'm not going to communicate with you, and so on. So because bosses make it hard sometimes, rather than giving a big theoretical set of recommendations, we're going to be specific and recommend some specific things you can do to help you understand where your boss is coming from to reduce the chances that you have friction or failure with your new boss. In the beginning, that's what we want. You're not going to hit home runs in the first 90 or 180 days with your boss, usually. Some people do. I think that's just good fortune.
Yeah, but at least you won't crash and burn.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to avoid. We don't want you stupidly making a mistake that you could look back on and say, well, there's no way I could have known that, when in fact, with a little bit of advance notice, you could have. So we have four recommendations. First of all, this is going to sound really simplistic, but some people don't know it. You need to learn all your boss's peers' names. You need to learn your boss's preferences. We'll talk more about what those are in a minute. And you need to learn your boss's strengths and weaknesses. Finally, for those of you who are knowledgeable about DISC, and there are some difficulties working with new bosses on this, we recommend you analyze your new boss's DISC profile. That's kind of a last step. It may be kind of a bonus step for some people, but if you can do it, it's well worth it.
I'm shocked, my friend, that you would say, like, the first thing on our list is learn all your boss's peers' names. I mean, that's not even about your boss. Why worry about your boss's peers? I mean, it's not your boss.
Yeah. Your boss's peers are important for two reasons. First of all, when your boss talks about the work he's doing with other departments, the people he talks about are likely to be his peers. Okay. And particularly if your boss is a high I or a high S, he'll only refer to people by their first names. Knowing whom everyone is helps you understand the context and the work that he's talking about. Second, being able to refer to those people by name is an important step in your assimilation to the company and the perception of your boss as being part of the team. The sooner you can refer to people by their names and the reports, department systems that are in the organization by their acronyms, the quicker you become one of us and not the new guy.
Yeah, I think that's the key point there.
And look, I don't think there's anything wrong. When I used to go to work, this started for me in the Army, but I did it at Procter & Gamble. I wanted an org chart. I wanted the org chart of my boss and his peers and his boss. I wanted to understand where people were.
Yeah, we didn't mention that specifically here until just now. But look, if you're learning your boss's peers' names, go get an org chart. I mean, maybe that ought to be like point 1A.
If your boss has an admin, just go to him or her and say, do you have an org chart? I'm new. When he says, go talk to Ross, I want to know where Ross is. Maybe he's in the Department of Paleontology. Maybe he's not. But, you know, where is he? And usually admins will take pity on new people.
Usually. Admins are a great resource. And folks, if you're new to a company, take advantage of that. Good. All right. So your next point is learn your boss's preference. So you're talking about, you know, whether or not they take Splenda or sugar or cream in their coffee, how they like their steak, medium rare or rare, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
You're funny. You are funny.
I'm funny.
Yeah. You're a funny, funny man. We have a cast called Is Your Boss a Listener or a Reader? And that teaches you how to identify your boss's preferences. If you've not listened to that cast, I'll give you a simple example. Mike is a reader. I am a listener. If you work for me and you send me a long email with some attachments to prep me for a meeting, I will not read it. I'm just telling you, I'm not. Now, look, if my boss sends it to me, I'm going to read it because he's my boss. But if you send it to me, I'm not. Okay? I'm just not. I don't like to learn that way, particularly emails. For some reason, people, in my experience, haven't learned how to write emails in ways that are helpful to audiences. Okay. That said, if we're going to have a meeting, what I want is come in and brief me. I'll listen. I'll ask questions. It'll be fairly interactive. And then I'll want you to send me all the data. Now, look, if it's a five-hour presentation, obviously, I'm probably going to want to do some advanced work. This is not a black and white situation. Okay, but I would prefer for you to talk to me first. Okay? Mike is just the opposite. If you're going to have a meeting with Mike, he wants you to send an email first with some basics and some background. And if there are attachments he needs to look at, do that. And then you can go in and have a briefing with him and he'll have questions based on what he read. If you go into Mike's office thinking you can just chat with him because that's the way you are, and you start chatting with him, he's going to get irritated and go, well, no, send me this stuff first and then come back. And not only are you not going to get what you want in the first meeting, you're less likely to get it in the second meeting because you've irritated him. It's like, dude, that's not the way I work. You need to know the distinction between is your boss a reader or a listener, okay? But look, bosses have other preferences too. Knowing whether or not your boss is an early meetings kind of person versus a late stayer can help you know when to schedule meetings with him or her. Other things that are worth looking for. Does she fly by the seat of her pants, or does she like to plan? Does she like to have a well-thought-out plan? Does she prefer to make all the decisions? Does she prefer to let you make the decisions? You know, if you work for me, I'll let you make the decisions, okay? And I'll hold you accountable. I had a guy tell me once, well, if you hold me accountable, then that's not me making the decision. I said, oh, yeah, it is. You just don't want the responsibility of making decisions. You like choosing. You just don't like being responsible. You know, some bosses say, tell me about it first. Give me an early warning. Some bosses say, just brief me when it's done. Some bosses over-communicate. Communicate daily with me. Other bosses, it's like, only talk to me when you need to, when you really need to. If you think I need to know something, fine. Otherwise, leave me alone. Some bosses, punctuality is important. You know, let's start on time, by gosh. Other bosses, they couldn't care less. And, you know, it occurred to me that as I was reading this, I'm kind of an amalgam of the two. I'm certainly not a paragon of management ability, but I absolutely expect people to be on time for meetings. I do, every time. I don't think it's hard. I really don't. I know very senior people at big organizations who are on time. And I'm not saying that if you're late, you're a bad person or that makes you terribly ineffective. It can be expensive at higher levels. On the other hand, if somebody comes in 15 minutes late and they get all their work done, I don't care if they're 15 minutes late. I do care if they're 15 minutes late and then they lollygag. They don't get anything done for 45 minutes or something like that. And they act as if it's no big deal. And they better be a good performer. If they're not a good performer and they come in late, I feel like, well, you could have gotten something done in the first 15 minutes when you weren't here.
I don't think that's on, right? I feel the same way. And the difference for me is being late to a meeting not only affects you, it affects everybody at that meeting. We're being late to work, assuming that you're not late for a meeting. You know, it affects your productivity, but not,
right.
At least not directly somebody else who's waiting for you.
Now, I will also say, if you're new, if you're a senior manager or an executive and you're late a couple of times, I assume it's an aberration. If in the first month you work for me, you're late a lot, I assume that you know that first impressions are important and that you did your best to be on time and you're not capable of doing it because you're not organized, you're an inefficient person, and you're sending me a message that you are not going to be on time long-term in this organization, which bothers me.
Right.
Some bosses are a family-first kind of person. Other bosses say, if I wanted you to have a family, I'd have told you who they were, and I expect you to be here all the time. Some bosses trust you. Some bosses believe in trust but verify. Some bosses don't trust you at all and expect to see everything. None of those are inherently good or bad. Well, okay, maybe they are. Maybe trusting bosses are good. I would actually change the trust but verify to trust and verify, because customers trust our products and they verify them when they right. buy them. And then some bosses get angry and then get over it. Some bosses get angry and then hold on to it. I worked for a boss who got angry and held on to it, and he was no fun to be around. So the point is, pay attention to your boss. When you're in a meeting and you're not the one speaking, which is often true for the first 90 days you're on a job with a new boss, pay attention to what your boss says to other people. Pay attention whether she looks or doesn't look at somebody when she talks. Pay attention to whether she makes statements that are designed to elicit responses or whether she asks questions. Pay attention to whether there's an agenda or not. Look, if your boss doesn't have an agenda, you probably don't need to have one if you're going to run a meeting for him or her. Now, we don't recommend that, but if you have a choice between having the right content, because it's short notice, having the right content in the meeting and spending time creating an agenda, for a boss who doesn't create agendas, I wouldn't create an agenda. Okay. And if your boss is someone who gets angry and doesn't like a lot of organization, and then you come into a meeting with an agenda that your boss is in, you're probably going to make him or her angry, in which case that's probably not going to help your meeting. We recommend a lot of things over at Manager Tools that we would encourage you to keep under your hat if, in fact, your boss violently disagrees with them, or even if he or she just disagrees with them openly. I've told people many times, if your boss says he doesn't like one-on-ones, keep doing them. If your boss insists you stop, then stop doing one-on-ones. I mean, don't shoot yourself in the face. On the other hand, continue to have weekly meetings with your directs. Just don't call them one-on-ones. Just say, meet with Bob or meet with Tony. And then don't tell him you're doing one-on-ones. And when he calls and says, you got to come up here, I say, boss, I'm in a meeting. And he says, come anyway. Well, okay. You did your right of first refusal, or your first right of refusal. So, okay. Then go and look at your direct and say, I'm sorry, we got trumped. But pay attention to these kinds of distinctions early on. And I'll tell you something. For most people that I know, when I've been coaching them, when I've been working with them on their bosses, their relationship with their boss, the single biggest thing I've noticed is they notice things that their boss does that's different than them. If your boss does what you do, it doesn't seem unusual. Okay. And so you don't notice. Okay. Your brain is looking for things out of pattern, out of order. I recommend you simply start taking notes. And that way you'll capture the things he does that are like you and the things he does that are not like you.
All right. Now, our next point, learn your boss's strengths and weaknesses. So I assume, and I'm sorry, folks, for my stupid jokes. I assume you're not talking about whether their weakness is their front hand or back hand, or whether they're more susceptible to the Sicilian defense or the Queen's Gambit in chess.
All of the clubs in their bag is their weakness, right?
That would be me. If you're working for me, that would be me.
Yeah. Look, learning your boss's strengths and weaknesses can help everybody on the team better. So part of your job, whatever level you're at, whether you like it or not, is to make your boss more effective. Even if you're the VP of marketing and your boss is a CEO, you're there to make marketing work and help your boss run the company. If your boss has so much going on that he has a tendency to drop balls occasionally, which could be big and could break, then pick him up, catch him. If your boss is abrasive at times, it's a weakness, smooth the waters after he's gone, okay? If there's a big IT project going on and the boss just rips somebody in IT, go over and tell the IT guy, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. Okay. If he isn't great with detail, make sure the details are accurate. Okay. Don't be interested in being so like your boss, because I promise you somebody else in that role succeeded in his role, your boss's role, with exactly the opposite tendencies that your boss has today. Maybe your boss's weaknesses are tolerable, but with a little extra effort, you can keep your boss's weaknesses from becoming an Achilles heel. Okay. If your boss isn't great with detail, fine. Again, make his reports accurate. You don't need to make this obvious. Okay. You know, hey, boss, I noticed you really stink at details. So I'm just double checking your work. You know, hey, no offense, boss. Why don't you let me check that? I know the details aren't your thing. Don't say that in a meeting. When your boss gets the report beforehand, go to the guy who prepared the report for the boss and say, hey, let me look at it first. You don't say out loud, hey, I noticed you missed some details in that spreadsheet and I'm going to correct it for you. You just do it. If he needs documents before a meeting, send in the documents in advance. Hey, thought you needed to see these. Okay. It's like being a safety net. And we're not, by the way, we're not talking about being his admin. I'm amazed. I recently had a situation where somebody asked me to be in a meeting and they just wanted me to supervise. And then in the course, you know, just to be there, I think to, well, Mark's in the meeting and so everybody will behave. And during the course of the meeting, there were documents discussed, but I didn't have the documents. Somebody turned to me and says, what do you think? And I said, I'm sorry, I don't have the documents. Now, luckily, the person who had sent them remembered that she hadn't sent them, or else she would have said, well, I sent you some. And then why am I even there? If I'm going to look bad and basically people are going to have to trust the meeting manager that she sent documents to Mark that Mark didn't open, right? Now I have very little credibility in the meeting other than my role power, which is not why I'm there to begin with. So make sure your boss, if he or she is in a meeting, has what he or she needs. You've got to be paying attention to what your boss's strengths and weaknesses are. You do.
One of the things that continually amazes me, and it's not a great percentage of people who do this, but there are a number of people who think this way. They believe that their best chance of being promoted is for their boss to look bad and for them to look good.
Do you think really?
Or better. Absolutely. Absolutely. Run people really? All the time. And folks, just to be clear, that's not the way it works. If your boss looks bad to her boss, you look bad. His or her entire organization is tainted by the perspective that his or her boss have on them. And the way to be successful is make your boss successful.
Yeah, this is fascinating to me. I mean, I had a boss once who wasn't any good, and it worried me. It worried the heck out of me.
It should have.
Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that there's a healthy chunk of people out there that think it's good to make their boss look bad.
Not necessarily good to make their boss look bad, but don't believe that bailing out their boss, so to speak, is the way to be successful, right? They're not going to actively work to make their boss screw up, but they're not going to work hard to bail him or her out.
Yeah.
Look, if your boss is completely incompetent, you ought to be trying to make her look competent.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of it before. I think you're totally right now that I think about it. You're totally right, dude. And I think people's unwillingness to help a boss go from incompetent to at least neutral is based on the misperception that from above, senior people or more senior people than their boss truly know all of the directs of their boss. In other words, if my boss screws up, they'll know I'm the best guy for the job. Let me just tell you something, folks. We don't. Okay. 90% of what we know about people in the organization comes from their boss. 90%. If your boss is an idiot or is having a string of bad luck and is doing poorly, you are tainted by that. Now, you may say, well, that's not the way it should be. I don't care how it should be. It is the way it is. Horseman's ninth law, embrace reality. It's true. And if your boss is not doing well and you're not helping, you're making yourself look bad. Again, you may wish for a different world, but that's the world we live in. Mike, I never thought that people not only didn't know that, but then went further and didn't help. But yeah, I can absolutely see it to be true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Don't do it, folks.
Yeah. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Let's talk about this now. I guess this is somewhat of a bonus, right? You could do the first three things we talked about and make significant progress and position yourself well. If you want to go a little bit further, analyzing your new boss's DISC profile is incredibly powerful.
This is the best way we know to learn what it takes to work well with someone using their DISC profile. But many of our listeners are not familiar with DISC. Some people have a doctrinaire dismissal of it. That's okay. We respect that. As I've said before, we console ourselves by being right. And we have a lot of previous casts on this. If you're new to a boss, gosh, there's a whole bunch of information we're going to share that'll help. The meetings you've already had with your boss, the emails your boss has sent you, you probably have enough information to assess where they fall within the DISC model. We have a cast called Simple Behavioral Communications Clues. We teach you how to place people into the various hemispheres of the DISC model. Even if you don't have enough information that your boss is a D, an I, or an S, or a C, you can at least say they're likely assertive or reserved, or they're likely task focused, or they're likely people focused. You can eliminate 50% probably of what they are not simply by paying attention to their behaviors. Look, a question as simple as what time shall I come in on my first morning can be very telling, right? A high C boss of yours will want to take the time to think about what meetings he has, what other members of the staff will be in, what time HR briefing happens, whether he'll have a computer set up for you. A high I boss, the other end of the spectrum, will just say whenever and doesn't really care whether the preparations have gotten done or not. High D boss will immediately give you a time and not think through the consequences. Whatever time a high D boss gives you, he'll make work. Simple. High S boss will want you to come in at a time which works for you, but also which allows him to have made all the necessary arrangements so you'll have a comfortable first morning. We've got casts on email about how to analyze email. If you have 50 emails from your boss, there's a tone, a length, a word choice, the punctuation, all will give you a sense of the type of boss you have. And if you come to me and you ask me 50 questions, I'm going to get irritated. Okay. If you come to me and tell me 50 decisions you made based on the answers you guessed to those questions and some of them turned out wrong, I'm okay with that. I want you to take action. I love the Marine slogan, you know, do what you can with what you have, where you are right now. And then we'll sort it out. Right. I just finished a book about Churchill, and he was famous for stickers on file folders. They were red stickers. And with all the work he had to do, he had a red sticker on some folders which said, action this day, meaning a decision had to be made. Because he knew that he was a very independent, very forceful, very high D, very high I, who arguably saved Britain. And he knew that left to the bureaucracy of the War Department, the Admiralty, whatever, Parliament and so on, things wouldn't get done. Things would get slowed down. All things get slower in large organizations. The moment you have to communicate with two people, it takes twice as long. And so he moved quickly on things. So I want people, I admire him. So I tend to want to be more like guys like that. And so that means I'd rather you make a decision. Just go ahead, make a decision. It'll be okay. I would rather have you make a decision and have you learn from a right one and a wrong one and be taking action to save the time of talking to me than come to me with questions for fear you might be wrong. I will be in somebody's face much more quickly about their fear of being wrong rather than I would them actually being wrong. Now, I'm not saying that's a right way to be, but it would be good for you to know that if you work for me. And if you're my boss, and I can think of some guys out there that are listening right now that I could absolutely work for. If you're my boss and you're completely different than me, that's okay. I'll learn your style. Okay. I will say this about bosses and DISC. The single biggest analytical mistake that people make, and this is why we made this kind of a bonus, regarding analyzing people's DISC profiles is incorrectly categorizing their boss as a high D when in fact he or she is not. And the reason for that is because bosses can get away with more short, direct, if you'll pardon the phrase for the high Ds, dismissive communications and interactions with their directs than they can with anybody else. And so bosses appear to directs to be much more high D than they often are. Not saying that you're wrong if you categorize your boss as a high D after watching her for 90 days. You could be right. And there are more high D and high I bosses, more senior in your organization, percentage-wise, per capita, than there are elsewhere in the world. Because D's and I's are more comfortable with risk, and managerial roles, as you get higher in the organization, tend to require more comfort with risk. But I would encourage you, if after a week you're certain your boss is a high D, think again, give yourself another month, another 6 weeks, look at email, look at voicemail, look at meetings, and so on. And if you have questions, come to the forums and ask.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, dude, this is simple. This is really simple stuff. Relationship with your boss early on is going to be helpful. Even if, guys, let me say something else. Even if your boss is the one who hired you and she told you you're awesome, you're great, you're going to fit right in, There's an old joke about the recruit where the recruit comes on a site visit and he sees the offices and it's heaven. There are people everywhere bringing him food and coffee and what he wants in his coffee. And it's cloudy and lovely and pristine and serene and fabulous. And then he says, well, I want to come to work here. I accept your offer. And the next day he comes to work and he walks in and it's hell. And he says, my gosh, what happened? It looks different. He says, hey, yesterday you were a recruit. Today you're staff. Right. And so don't assume that everything your boss said to you during the recruiting process, the interviewing process, was an accurate prediction of how things will be, because that's the difference between sales and operations. Now, we're not saying people are unethical, but your ability to accurately analyze your future boss during the recruiting process is probably somewhat limited, and you need to set the scales back to zero as you start learning about your new boss.
There you go. Pretty straightforward stuff.
And valuable.
Yeah. No, no kidding, folks.
Yeah.
There's no other relationship at work more important than your relationship with your boss.
Yep.
And treat it that way. All right, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, partner.
All right. We'll see you. Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it, and hope to see you back here again next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.